Right now, I'm very happy to welcome back to our program Ray McGovern, a retired CIA officer whose 27-year career at the CIA, he briefed Presidents Reagan and George H.W. Bush, and more recently, Ray McGovern was the founder of the group Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPS for short. Ray has been a longtime critic of the Iraq War and many other U.S. foreign policy adventures, but he's here tonight to reflect a bit on the 10th anniversary of the Iraq War. Appreciate you making time for us, Ray.
Glad to be with you, Scott.
I thought we'd begin in refreshing our listeners' recollection of a famous confrontation you had with Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld on May 4th, 2006, where you challenged Mr. Rumsfeld on the Bush administration's primary reason for going to war in Iraq, the threat of what they said were Saddam Hussein's alleged weapons of mass destruction, a claim later proven to be false. What I'm going to play right now for the next minute or two is an excerpt of a CNN report from that day, but I think listeners will be fascinated to hear a little bit of this before we talk more extensively about this issue in the 10-year reflection of what happened there. We'll be back to you in a moment, Ray.
Hecklers like the one who stood with his back to the secretary during the speech couldn't rattle a man with Rumsfeld's steel. But in an extraordinary piece of public theater, Ray McGovern, who claimed to be a former CIA analyst, took Rumsfeld on mano a mano over pre-war claims Iraq had weapons of mass destruction.
You said you knew where they were.
I did not. I said I knew where suspect sites were, and we were just...
You said you knew where they were, near Tikrit, near Baghdad, and north, east, south, and west of there. Those are your words.
My words were that... No. Wait a minute. Let him stay 1 second. Just a second.
This is America, huh?
And in America, we fact-checked, and we found that in an appearance on ABC's This Week 3 years ago, Rumsfeld did say those words.
We know where they are. They're in the area around Tikrit and Baghdad and east, west, south, and north somewhat.
With what appeared to be the facts on his side, McGovern kept going, an exchange that lasted a full 2 minutes and 35 seconds.
I just like an honest answer.
I'm giving it to you.
We're talking about lies, and your allegation that there was bulletproof evidence of ties between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. Was that a lie, or were you misled?
Hold on. Did Rumsfeld ever say bulletproof? According to the New York Times, he did, September 27, 2002, in Atlanta. And a month later, he admitted saying it. But a year after that, he told the National Press Club, bulletproof? Not me.
You said about a year ago that there was bulletproof evidence that of links between Saddam Hussein and the September 11th attacks. When will the American public see that sort of evidence?
I did not say that.
Okay. September 27th.
And whoever said I said it is wrong.
But back to the action in Atlanta.
Zarqawi was in Baghdad during the pre-war period. That is a fact.
Zarqawi, he was in the north of Iraq in a place where Saddam Hussein had no rule.
He was also in Baghdad.
Yeah, when he needed to go to the hospital.
Well, that's an excerpt from a CNN discussion of the confrontation our guest tonight, Ray McGovern, had, former CIA officer, with Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld back on May 4th, 2006. Ray, it's great to hear that confrontation again for one particular reason. I think it may be one of the few times anybody in the Bush administration was confronted with their words and the lies they spoke during the years where they tried to ramp up public support for the war. Okay, we got our guest Ray McGovern back on the line. Ray, thanks for sticking with us here. So what are some of your thoughts recollecting that confrontation with Donald Rumsfeld back so many years ago?
Well, I think what impressed me the most about all that was that I was incredibly lucky in one sense. That all happened about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Nothing else in the whole world happened worth reporting. And so that footage was available live, CNN, C-SPAN, a couple other media, to the pundits in the evening, and since they had nothing else to put on the show and knew that their competitors were going to run it, I was on all the TV things that evening. That's number one. That was pure luck. If there's anything at all, even one of the Kennedys going for drying out for alcoholism, they would have certainly bucked me off, but there was nothing else happening. Now, what else? Well, as I left that very ritzy, white, male, southern, defense-friendly think tank, I got a call on my cell phone. Hello? Mr. McGovern? Yeah, who's this?
This is Anderson Cooper. You're making quite a stir down here in Atlanta. I'd like to have you on my show tonight, but first I need to ask you a question.
Sure.
Weren't you afraid?
Now, I was pretty much still in shock there. Scott, are you still on here?
Certainly am.
Yeah, okay. I was pretty much in shock. And so I, you know, that's a, you know, normal question. So I said, no, I really wasn't very much afraid. I knew I had my facts right. I did my homework, and I'm used to dealing with the secretaries. And then I thought, wait a second, McGovern. Isn't this the heir to the Vanderbilt fortune? Isn't this the pretty face on TNN? I mean, this guy's not going to be out in the street with his hat out. So then I turned a little different, and I said, Anderson, let me tell you, it was a real high. I'd done my homework. I knew when I asked him, I quoted him back to himself, he'd either have to acknowledge they lied or he'd lie this time. And so, Anderson, you might want to think about it, you know. Do your homework. Try to ask real questions, and you'll find it's a real high. You just try it sometime, Anderson. And he goes, oh, well, very well and good. I'll have my people get in touch with your people. I said, Anderson, I don't have any people. Just feel free to call me back on this number.
Oh, all right.
And then Paul Lazan's people called. And there was a woman, very efficient woman.
Well, Mr. McGovern, down here in Atlanta, you're really causing a ruckus here. Paula wants you on her show.
Now, Scott, I don't watch much television, but I had known, you know, there was a pause on. But, you know, the tone really, I didn't like it. So I said, Paula who? I said, oh, Paula Zahn, of course. I said, does she have a local radio station out here in Atlanta? Oh, who is she? Who's this Paula Zahn? Oh, Mr. McCurry. Well, guess what? Paula Zahn comes on, with the guns flaring when I got on her show. Mr. McGovern, why is it? How long have you had this animus toward the Secretary of Defense? I said, I beg your pardon? Why did you follow him down to Atlanta? I said, actually, Paula, I was down here first. I guess you could say he followed me down here. I had an event to go there. Well, and it went from there downhill. I mean, they were really out to get me. And if it weren't for Keith Olbermann, who's got the best fact-checked version of that thing, the lesson would have been lost on a lot of people, that this media, against their will, had to run this thing because there was nothing else to report that day. And which kind of, you know, leads me to what I always, I'm up here in New Jersey talking at some colleges, and I always try to leave the young people with a teaching point, sort of quaint, I suppose, but, and the major teaching point that I've been trying to teach over the last decade is that we no longer have, in any real sense, a free media. And that's big. You know, there are a lot of changes I've seen in my 50 years in Washington, but none is of the proportion of this. The fourth estate is dead. Good news is that there's a fifth estate. That's in the ether. That's on the Internet and the web. And that's going to be our salvation if those of us my age learn how to use it right, and the young ones use it in a way that pursues justice. And as I was thinking about, you know, the 10th anniversary of this war of aggression, you know, I never thought I'd live to see the day where not only would there be a war of aggression started by my country that I love so much, but that my profession, the profession of intelligence analysis, would be prostituted to, quote, justify, end quote, this war of aggression. And that's precisely what happened. Long story short, after a 5-year investigation, the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Jay Rockefeller, releasing a bipartisan report about pre-war intelligence justifying the war in Iraq. It was a bipartisan report because Chuck Hagel and Olympia Snow signed on to it. What Rockefeller said is that the intelligence that was adduced to justify the war in Iraq was, quote, uncorroborated, contradicted, or even non-existent, period, end quote. Now I ask you, Scott, what does non-existent intelligence look like? I'll tell you. Looks like forgeries, looks like made-up stories, looks like the stuff that Cheney and his minions prepared so that they could deceive the world and our Congress. And that's what really got me. I have this thing about our Constitution, okay? And I actually, like so many millions of others in this country, I took a solemn oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And, you know, when I saw, as we watched 10 years ago, 11 years ago, the profession of intelligence analysis being corrupted for the express purpose of deceiving our elected representatives out of their constitutional duty, their constitutional prerogative to declare or otherwise authorize war, it doesn't get any worse than that. And so that's when we formed our little Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. There were five of us this time, 10 years ago. Now there's 65. And we'll put out 23 corporate memoranda, most of them addressed directly to the president, as we used to when we were on active duty, so to speak.
Ray, I'm reflecting about the motivation for the war in Iraq. Obviously, we have knowledge now that the stated reasons at the time, weapons of mass destruction, links with al-Qaeda, Iraq's intention to attack the United States was all out of nonsense. What do you think the real motivation in the Bush administration was to begin this horrendous, very costly war?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. Early on, I came on an acronym, okay? The acronym is OIL. Now, John Stewart made great fun of me after I used that for the first time before Congress. He said, "McGovern, you're violating the rules for acronyms. You can't have an acronym, the first letter of which spells out what you really mean, McGovern. That's not fair. That's violating the rules." Well, I felt great about that because he was making the point that the most important was the first letter, O for oil. I for Israel, and L for logistics, the permanent military bases that we hope to emplace in Iraq forever and ever. Now, we didn't talk about permanent military bases. We talked about enduring military bases. Okay, that's, you know, sounded a little bit more endearing, I suppose. Anyhow, those were the three aims. Now, there are people who say, no, it wasn't about oil. I just don't have any patience with them. The Middle East wouldn't be important if it wasn't for oil and natural gas and water and that kind of thing. Israel? Well, the Israelis wanted us to attack Iran. Well, yeah, that's true. But Wolfowitz and Cheney and Rumsfeld said, no, we'll do Iraq first because they're the easier one. And the Israelis, of course, applauded that and cheerleaded for that. See, the people running our policy toward that part of the world, then and to a certain extent now, have great difficulty distinguishing between what they perceive to be the strategic interests of Israel on the one hand, and the strategic interests of the United States on the other. They tend to see them as identical. Now, you know, I'm not accusing them of anything other than very poor judgment. That's the fact. That's how they look at it. It's wrong. It's dead wrong in terms of Americans' strategic interests. But they thought that if we displace Saddam, put in this hack, Chalabi, who, you know, what I like to say about Chalabi, he was the Wolfowitz-Rumsfeld Feith candidate to take over Iraq after Saddam was ousted. Chalabi pretended to have this huge following in Iraq. Israel. Everything was going to be hunky-dory, and Israel would be a lot safer. We're right, okay? Now, how long had Chalabi been away from Iraq? He had to flee because he was being prosecuted in that part of the world for embezzlement. I'll tell you how long it was that Chalabi had been in Iraq. He left Iraq the same year that the Brooklyn Dodgers left Brooklyn, okay? You know, the same year the Los Angeles Dodgers were created. That, I think, is about 1958, if I'm not mistaken. And so, how could he have charmed Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, and all those guys to thinking that he would be the guy to take over? Anyhow, he was going to normalize relations with Israel, and that was one major objective. The other thing speaks for itself. Enduring military bases. Well, we had them in Saudi Arabia. That didn't work out really well because Osama bin Laden and many thousands of others thought that that was a violation of the sacred sites there in that land. So we just move them over to Iraq and we'd be able to dominate that part of the world. Now, I hasten to add that when I testified before Congress in June of 2005 and told these fairly sympathetic Democratic representatives that it's very clear that the U.S. and Israel meant to dominate that part of the world, guess what I was called? Anti-Semitic. I mean, I couldn't believe it. They went home to their offices and they issued a statement within 2 hours. McGovern is anti-Semitic because he says that Israel and the United States are trying to dominate that part of the world. And then Howard Dean, who at that point was the head of the Democratic Party, he came back into the office. Then he issued a statement. Yes, McGovern is anti-Semitic. Well, you know, it was so transparent what was happening. You're not allowed to say anything against Israel, especially not publicly with C-SPAN on, and especially not in Congress. And, you know, I wasn't running for anything, and I didn't need any donations. And so I was really glad that I acted as an intelligence analyst and not somebody trying to curry favor with the powers that be. So those were the three reasons. Now, the other thing, Scott, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot. I mean, the obvious question is, well, number one, I am convinced, the evidence is overwhelming, that they knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. They knew that there were no ties between Iraq and al-Qaeda. And yet, this propaganda offensive was so effective that this time 10 years ago, 69% of the American people thought not only that Saddam Hussein had ties with al-Qaeda, but that Saddam Hussein was in part responsible for what happened on 9/11. So, you know, that was the insidious part of this whole thing. So the question is, the remaining question in my view is, how did they possibly think they'd get away with it? I mean, what was the mass destruction? And they knew there were none. Well, the only thing I could figure out, and this is, you know, surmise on my part, is that, you know, they really thought that it was going to be a cakewalk. They really thought that we could march into Iraq, get rid of Saddam Hussein, put Chalabi in power. He would recognize Israel, would have troops, military bases, would have control over that part of the world, including the oil resources, appreciable as they are in Iraq. And then who's going to come around and say, but you lied about the weapons of mass destruction. You lied about the ties between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. Who's gonna be so picky and come back? We're sitting pretty in back. No, give me a break. We'll be able to defend ourselves from all those things for the greater good. And I think they really thought that. And that just is a mark of how you act when you're an imperial power that thinks it can work its will on a nation like Iraq, where we have been responsible for utter desolation and destruction. It's not a happy chapter. We as Americans, if we style ourselves as a democracy, we should all be deeply ashamed.
Ray, I'm sorry we're almost out of time, but I wondered if you could give us a short, maybe two-minute answer on this one. There's been no accountability for the Bush administration that began this very tragic war, tragic chapter in our history, as you said. What should happen in terms of accountability for the men, the architects of this war?
Well, ideally they should be brought before the Hague because some of the actions taken were demonstrably war crimes. Now, George Bush decided not to sign on to the International Criminal Court, and so that's apparently not a not an option. I think what citizens should do is what my friends are doing down in Dallas as they prepare for the opening of the Bush, well, they're calling it the Bush Library. It's really the Bush Library. They're going to get up and they're going to educate everyone in Dallas that they can as to what really happened. And meanwhile, we just have to keep the faith here and try to get the truth out. And with the fifth estate that I mentioned, with the web and with the internet, there's a good chance that we can make an impact and console ourselves for the present with the thought, the real thought, that poor Bush, poor Rumsfeld, they can't even travel to Europe without being afraid of being picked up, imprisoned, and prosecuted for war crimes. Rumsfeld had to hightail it out of Paris 4 years ago when they found he was there. Bush had to cancel a trip to Geneva just 2 years ago when it was very clear that he was going to be prosecuted if he set foot in Europe. So there's small solace in that. It's terribly embarrassing to have a former president of the United States unable to travel to Europe. But at least those parts of Europe seem to have more sense of justice in the fact that people should be held accountable for the crimes that they commit.
Well, Ray, thanks so much for joining us. We'll stay in touch to talk about this and other issues that you're working on. Is there a website you'd recommend our listeners go to find your most recent article, Eyes Wide
Yes.
Shut on the Iraq War, or other articles you've got?
Yeah, actually, it's called raymcgovern.com. RAYMCGOVERN.com. And I write first for consortiumnews.com, but my son always posts those articles, or at least the URL, on RayMcGovern.com.
Perfect. All right, Ray, it's great to talk to you again, and thanks for your reflections and insights on the Iraq War 10 years later. Appreciate it, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
You're most welcome, Scott. Take care.
Thank you. Right. That's Ray McGovern, retired CIA officer, 27 career veteran of the CIA, and had that famous confrontation with Donald Rumsfeld back in May 4th, 2006, I should say.